In a political landscape dominated by noise, crisis, and quick fixes, one party keeps insisting that the answer is competence. A steadier hand, a calmer plan. The Liberal Democrats say Britain's economy does not need a revolution, it needs rebuilding. From social care to small businesses, from green investment to tax reform, their pitch is simple. Fix the foundations and the country can finally move forward. Tonight, we're unpacking that promise. What the Lib Dems want to change, how they say it will work, and what economists, supporters, and critics make of it. This is the Liberal Democrat Economic Deep Dive. My name is Rehan.
And I'm Sasha.
And welcome back to Capital and Consequence. Sasha, I mean, we've done reform, we've done green, and now it's on to Lib Dems.
Lib Dems. I'm actually, you know, Lib Dems are the, you know, they're the one which no one really talks about economically. Well, you know, the whole big motto is rejoin Europe. And that's what most people know about the Lib Dems. So I want to see how they actually want to go around their economic policies, which are so important in an economic climate like the UK's.
Yep. And also, the other thing is that Lib Dem, nobody really seems to talk about them. They're almost just there. They've done really well in council elections. They're doing well in the polls. They've gained a lot of seats. So they're definitely in there. It's just they've almost been overshadowed by the noise of Reform and Green. And people are like almost unaware of Lib Dems. And it's going to be really interesting to go through their economic deep dive and what they think. And yeah, what have you made of it so far?
I find it quite interesting. I feel like the way they navigate the economy is one which is quite more, you know, it's a bit reminds me of the austerity days of the Conservatives, where they try to not change much and to try to help make the economy be a bit more healthy by itself.
Mm-hmm. And where do you want to start? Because obviously...
Let's start with taxes, because I feel like it's probably the biggest thing which affects all of us. And it's, you know, it's what really, you know, is a major part of what we actually understand about the economy. Mm-hmm. So the Liberal Democrats treat tax as a funding tool for high return public services like the NHS, education and care. So, and they just want to kind of make something which will work for the current economy. So what they're planning for the income is 1% increase, and that around £6 to 7 billion per year. So it's not as much as, for example, reform or planning, or as or for example the Greens. But it's just trying to. It's probably mostly earmarked for the NHS and social care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that Lib Dems like explicitly state that they reject raising the headline rates of basic income tax, national insurance, or VAT. And instead, they want to extract revenue from corporate distributions, from tech multinationals and high-value capital transactions.
Yeah.
And so the first thing I want to talk about is their three-tier capital gains tax overhaul.
Yeah.
Where they propose almost breaking down the current system and replacing it with a three-tier bracket system, which is why it's called three-tier capital gains tax. And they want 20% for gains up to £50,000, 40% for gains between 50,000 and £100,000, and 45% for gains exceeding £100,000. And to offset this, they also want to raise the tax-free allowance from £3,000 to £5,000 and introduce an inflation allowance, which means that... asset appreciation is driven just by, like, driven by inflation is completely untaxed, which is very interesting compared to some of the other parties who aren't almost, like, doing much on inflation.
Yeah. I mean, one thing which really, really surprising about Liberal Democrats is the corporate tax, where the current rate is now 25%, and they want to keep it stable, which is much more different compared to the Greens and Reform. And this stability is really important, in my opinion, because it allows for investment, which the UK falls behind other G7 partners, for investment decisions to become long-term. Mm-hmm. And the uncertainty about the sort of investment will need a sort of stability on tax rates, and this 25% stability on how much they tax on corporate giants will be very beneficial for the investment in the UK, which is falling behind, as mentioned before. And one thing which I also find quite interesting is the DST, or Digital Service Tax. Mm-hmm. And its target is these large multinational companies in the UK, and these companies can bring around £2 or 3 billion per year in revenue, which can be spent again on the NHS and welfare. And the main thing about the Lib Dems' taxing policy is location specific tax, where they try to tax areas which don't try to overhaul the system, but small areas which they can gain around £10 to 8 billion.
Yeah, and they also want to introduce a commercial landowner levy, so a CLL, which shifts the tax burden entirely from tenant businesses to land owning landlords. And people believe that by doing this, it'll almost revive dying high streets because it lowers the fixed overheads for small retail startups and starts forcing landlords to lower rent or redevelop empty sites, which might lead to growth. And definitely it'll look better as a city and as a country if we've got more small businesses, because that, again, like I said earlier, will definitely drive growth. So I feel like the supporters have a very clear stance on this, which is that firstly, the CGT, which is the three-tier capital gains tax, inflation allowance, will resolve like a structural unfairness where investors pay tax on paper gains rather than real value increases. And also by shifting business rates to a CLL, again, as I said earlier, it'll start reviving dying high streets and it'll encourage more startups and growth. The problem is that the IFS warns that a £27 yield is highly optimistic and economically unstable, and that a 4% share buyback tax has no clear economic rationale, and companies will stop, like they'll move from buybacks to paying higher dividends, and that'll make a tax yield to go to near £0. So what does this basically mean? So to use this, I'm going to use a Cash App, Venmo, and an analogy, which I feel quite proud of thinking of. Mm-hmm. And this is every time, like, imagine I was sending £100 to you, right? I could either use Cash App or I could use Venmo. And it makes no difference to me or you, right? You get the exact same amount. But now imagine the government introduces like a new tax where every time I use Venmo, they take 4% of that tax. What are you going to do? You're not going to like pay that tax, right? You're just going to start using Cash App and send the entire £100 to your friend, where your friend still gets the money, but now the government gets nothing. So in this case, a share buyback is Venmo, which is when a company uses spare cash to buy its own stock, which drives up the price to make investors happy. And a dividend is a Cash App, when a company takes the same spare cash and just sends it directly to investors' bank accounts. So when companies switches like to the untaxed method, which is dividends, nobody's left doing the taxed method, which is buybacks. And so the government's expected pile of tax money completely disappears, which is why people and critics especially think it's a really bad design, because they feel that it might make the UK financially, it might make the UK tax revenue very, very low. And speaking of tax revenue, let's talk about what they plan to spend the money on. Sasha, do you have any clear?
Yeah, so the spending is quite, it's a sort of macro envelope, which I have to explain because it's a bit strange of a definition. So they want to spend around £10 to 15 billion a year, which that is around 1.2% or 2% of GDP of extra spending, financed by the targeted tax rises, which will account for 1% of the 1% or half of what they will try to fund this from, and the other from investment, which they'll borrow. And so what they'll use the money for is mainly the NHS, where they spend £8 to 10 billion a year, and also social care, which will be £7 to 7 billion a year too. And they invest this because they view this as sort of capital, as healthier workers will be more productive and work more years and will impose fewer costs later, allowing for the economy to grow. And social is also very important to invest in, because allow for a larger labour market angle, as it allow for better care provision and free up informal carers to work more. And they also want to spend around £4 or £5 billion a year to restore per pupil funding, and £1 or £2 billion a year for something like another version of the Open University. Try to build on that. So they want to build more on education, because education is a great way to increase the economy in the future, as it allows for more educated people, which will have better jobs, which will spend more on the economy, and it creates a whole sort of cycle.
And interestingly, they also want to spend 0.7% of the UK's GNI on international aid. And you know what I think about international aid?
Rehan can talk about this.
Basically, foreign aid is when rich countries give money from rich countries to the poor countries. And they do that for a whole number of reasons. I'm not a fan of it. Sasha, what are your views on it?
I personally find it as a great way to pay back, but I feel there are better ways instead of just giving them out, giving out money to these sorts of governments, which are mostly shady.
I mean, we can do another episode on that, maybe after our series, because that's a good one to do on. And like, in summary, I don't like it because it leads to something called the Dutch disease, and it also leads to dependency, and it can fuel corruption, as you said. So I'm not a big fan of foreign aid. But interestingly, they feel that international development assistance is incredibly important. So
back on track. So the final amount will be spending on infrastructure and green capital, which will be around £20 to £25 billion a year, which is more than the NHS, social and education all combined. And they do this because they want to spend on transport, digital, energy, and flood defense and climate adaptation. And this will be around 2% of the whole GDP, but many economists argue it'll be actually 3 or 4%. And what they'll do is they'll use a well-chosen public investment, and they'll use it to kind of crowd in the environment which the firms operate.
Mm-hmm. And just like to take a little bit of a detour, which is another niche thing that they're proposing, which I think I want to spend a little bit of time discussing, is they plan to expand the soft drinks industry levy. So that's the sugar tax, right? Just to give you an example, in the UK, I think normal Coke is £1.60 and Diet Coke is £1.50-ish. Like in a cafe, it'll be around that. And normal Coke is often more expensive than Diet Coke because of the sugar tax, where the UK taxes these very high added sugar companies and drinks to encourage people to move to healthier options. But what they want to do is they want to expand this sugar tax to include juice and milk-based drinks with high added sugars. And they also want to remove VAT from children's toothbrushes and toothpaste. But more importantly, they also want to impose a dedicated levy on tobacco company profits to fund smoking quitting programs, which is a very interesting thing to do. And it's almost very similar to what we've seen with Labour. And if you've not heard of it, recently, Labour, have they passed it yet? I'm not too sure where
It passed Lords.
It has passed Lords, House of Lords, where Labour wants to cut, for anybody born after the year 2009, they're not going to be able to buy a cigarette or a vape in the UK, even if they're over 18, which almost shows how the UK is starting to try, like the UK government is trying to encourage the new generation to become a lot more healthy, to or ease the burden on our NHS and all of that. And what do you think of this? Do you think it's a good idea, all these laws that are being passed regarding health care and making us more healthy?
Well, it makes, in my opinion, creating a kind of a nanny state where there's constant sugar levies and constant
you just say that smoking. You have taxes. An average of 10 Cokes a week.
Well, no, it will probably cause me to spend more. But I feel like it will just create a sense of that the government's trying to only control you too much. It's sort of a nanny state, as many economists call it, where they just constantly tax things which may be bad for you. But these are sorts of ways where people kind of relax, enjoy themselves. And these constant taxes on, you know, for example, alcohol, sugar, I feel are just a bit unnecessary.
I completely disagree with you. I think it's a great way for our generation, at least, to become a lot more healthy, to encourage us at least to make the right decisions. For example, just completely banning cigarettes and vapes. That's a huge move, especially considering the number of young people.
But they'll just go underground then. Because the underground will be more cheaper, more accessible, because they'll just, because smoking will, because they banned smoking for all of us. Smoking will go underground, and they may even make it more unsafe because they'll probably level you with other drugs. For example, weed in other countries is much more safe than it is in the UK because it is regulated. If we ban these sort of things like alcohol, sugar, they already did with the smoking, it will allow the, you know, the dark areas of the public to take control of it and manipulate it. For example, I gave you the example of weed. With weed, they and the weed which they sell underground in, you know, the alleys, have much are stringed with other drugs and are much more dangerous for people and much more stronger. While in other countries which have weed regulated and legal, it's much more safer for people to intake it and much more accessible for people. And they don't have to take it. It just allows for a safer and cheaper option. And so this constant levies allows things which we use like all the time, like sugar, smoking, alcohol, which a large proportion of the public use, to be going pushed underground.
I don't think that's the case, at least especially with the sugar tax, for example. 10p extra does not mean people are going to start buying fentanyl-laced coke. Let's be a bit realistic.
I may have over-exaggerated a bit, but with smoking, I feel like that's a big danger.
Regarding smoking and vaping, I don't feel like that's going to be the case. I feel like maybe a few more people might go to underground. Maybe there might be a bit of underground vaping and cigarettes. But if the UK does enforce what they said they're going to do, which is incredibly strict laws, I think... I'm not sure what the exact punishment was. I think I saw, like, fines of £10 million in there, amongst other things. And if they do actually enforce really, really strict laws and create a huge deterrence policy, then we might see this actually working out. Now, I want to move on to immigration. Do you see what I did? Migrate to immigration. Okay. I want to move to immigration and what the Lib Dems see immigration as, which is that they view immigration as functional and as a macroeconomic asset management tool. And they want to switch visa policy from domestic border enforcement, which is very different from what Reform wanted, which is Reform, as if you've not heard that, I'd highly recommend you hear that podcast because that was a very, very good one. Yeah. But what they want to do is, first of all, they want to strip the Home Office of its operational control over work and student visas. And they want to change this power to the Department for Business and Trade, as well as the Department for Education. So that will mean that the Department for Business and Trade will be in charge of all the corporate and skilled sector visas, and the Department for Education will be in charge of the international student visas. And they also feel like they want to reverse the sharp increases in minimum salary thresholds for skilled worker visas and healthcare visas, and they want to replace them with flexible regional shortage matrices. What do you think?
I mean, currently now in the UK, it's an aging population, rising dependency ratios, and there's long-term pressure on pensions and health spending. So personally, I disagree with Reform where they try to kick out immigration, because we need immigration, in my opinion, because we just don't have enough of the working class to fund this rising aging population and rising dependency ratios. And you'll see in the numbers where UK has one of the lowest fertility rates and is struggling with funding all these pensions and people who just don't work and bring any tax to the country. So, and they try to address it, the more youth mobility, recognition of qualifications and sector-specific visas, healthcare, agriculture, construction, hospitality, practically more with Greens on that sort of side of it.
I very much agree with you. And I think that's why Lib Dems want to introduce this policy. Because they feel that, I think, moving visa control from the Home Office to the Business Department will make it so that labor supplies directly matches the economic demand needed. And also by lowering salary thresholds, it means that certain sectors that fear severe work shortages, stuff like agriculture, construction, all of that, will be able to hire vital foreign staff without themselves going into bankruptcy.
And they probably have much good, very good experience too in this sort of areas, especially agriculture, where especially in lower economic countries, they get the pay, which they have never experienced before. But they get, they also bring the sort of experience, because agriculture is part of so many different cultures, and bringing that along and trying to infusing that, especially in a climate change, where trying to grow in areas where, for example, there's excessive rain one day and excessive heat the other. If they have certain techniques which can help our farmers develop, I believe immigration is so important for our current economic situation, but also where the world is going, climate-wise.
Yeah, and I think I just want to spend, as our next topic, just a small period of time on net zero and energy before moving on to the EU, like, and their views on rejoining the EU. But quickly about net zero and energy, I'd say that Lib Dems have a very similar strategy to Green, which is that they want to make sure that 80% of the UK's electricity comes from renewable sources by 2030. And they also want to put in a multi-billion pound national retrofitting program, which offers free installations, heat pumps, all of that, and subsidies, of course, for low-income households, to allow for an aggressive expansion of the energy profits levy, or also the windfall tax, as some other people know it, that can stop corporate investment allowances. And I agree with them. I think we really need to up our electricity, but obviously we've covered this a lot of times before, in Iran, in the Iran podcast, and in the Green podcast. So I think we can just skip through that.
Yeah. And with the Greens, the net zero idea, the whole reason they want to implement this is through three different lenses. Risk management, as mentioned before, they want to reduce the damages which will climate change will do on the economy. And I fear that countries like the US, who are just not preparing, or not even, like, you know, they're putting their head in the sand, metaphorically, they'll be much more hit with how climate change affects their agriculture and their oil, their all different types of sectors. And I just don't feel they're well prepared for it. While China, on the other hand, is building solar panels like no other. Mm-hmm. Another reason is macro stability. It reduces the reliance on other countries, and it creates a sense of foreign security in their own in energy production. Because the UK does have some oil, but it just doesn't have enough to sustain itself for, you know, with a sustainable future ahead. And renewable energy creates it stops being reliant on, for example, the Hormuz Strait or countries like Iran, Saudi Arabia, etc. And finally, it's industrial strategy. If we have this clean tech to help us grow the net zero idea, it'll help boost the energy sector, as there'll be new ideas created and allow for the boost for the economy in general.
Yeah, and I think now we can move on to the big one, which is where Lib Dem is incredibly different to some of the other political parties, which is that they feel that the state cannot generate sustained growth without breaking down the non-tariff trade barriers that was created by Brexit. And so essentially, they almost want to rejoin the EU in terms of market and customs union, and they want to erase all the custom borders while maintaining a political position outside of the EU. And they plan to do this through four stages. So the first stage is SPS alignment, where they want to negotiate a comprehensive sanitary and phytosanitary agreement with the EU to end physical border friction, veterinary checks, and red tape for British agriculture, food, and livestock exports.
And the whole plan includes rebuilding trade integration of the EU, restoring mutual recognition for professional services, rejoining Erasmus Plus, negotiating a UK-EU veterinary agreement, and reopening pathways for youth mobility.
Yeah, so again, second stage, like you said, was joining, again, part-time pan-European institutions like Erasmus Plus. And their ultimate goal is rejoining the EU Single Market and Customs Union. What do you think of this?
I think after the EU, it caused lower investment certainty, reduced labor mobility, caused higher trade barriers, and a loss for mutual recognition for services. And I feel this could be beneficial because it will increase trade intensity by around 15 to 20%, because we lost around 25% when we lost the EU. And it will reduce the sort of reintegrate supply chains and reopen the labor mobility channels. And as we mentioned before about immigration, it allows for a clean movement of labor where we need the labor, for example, agriculture, infrastructure, and etc. So, and we're rebuilding this regulatory alignment in key sectors.
Yeah, I also agree. And I feel like there is a huge reason why they need to join the EU. And like you said, it also means like we get more foreign direct investment into businesses, into the UK, which all will drive growth and all of that. Yeah.
And so, and the biggest problems with, for example, the economically, is that if we do not rejoin the EU, with the US on the other side, it will stop. We won't be able to repair the relationship, and we won't be able to rebuild trust. And joining the EU allows for deeper cooperation and moves aligns us both economically but also politically towards the EU, because politics is so intertwined with economics. And I read this in a book, Why Nations Fail. Great read. Do very recommend if you do economic.
And the other thing that I think that Lib Dem have done really well is that they want it to be a long-term solution, not a very short-term one, which means this allows them to rebuild trust, rebuild connections and all of that, which is so critical when trying to rejoin part of the EU.
And also rebuilding the economy in general. Because if we do not go long-term and always try to appeal the short-term routes, we'll never, ever build long-term economic stability.
Mm-hmm. So in the end, the Liberal Democrat economic plan comes down to something very simple. Invest in the people, fix the basics, and try and rejoin the EU. And it's clearly a model built on skills and stable rules instead of just aggressive, hardcore policies that Greens and Reform has.
And it really depends on the economic climate of the UK. If it's a UK is accepting of the stable, try to, you know, work with the basics and try to do what we normally always do, it may work. But with the Greens and the Reform, they're promising to try to reform it, to try to fix the broken system. And it really depends on how the UK markets and the people receive it.
Yeah, and whether you agree with it or not, it's definitely more simple and more safe compared to the Greens and Reform. I'm Rehan.
And I'm Sasha.
And thank you very much for listening to Capital and Consequence.